Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Ksivas daf Kaf Ches. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is on the Zeich Nishmas Liba Karpel Bashmul. We're in Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, right in the very bottom of the Amud. A lot of interesting discussions, certainly depressing discussions. Usually, when you learn Torah, you're not supposed to be depressed, but they are. The halacha over here that we're dealing with in the end of the second parak deals with extraordinarily serious issues where women, unfortunately, were compromised and under certain circumstances become prohibited to the husbands. Notably, when Ashes Cohen, a woman's married to a Cohen, so she will become prohibited to her husband if she's been violated. More than unfortunate circumstance, but that's the halacha. And what we're discussing in the course of our in these last Mishnayos is when exactly do we have to worry about such an event occurring, and what could possibly give her Ne'amanus test credibility or testimony, I should say, in terms of what allows her to continue to be with her husband. So if you just look back at the Mishnah, I'm going to just reread the Mishnah again. Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says here shekavshu karkom shekavshu karkom. So the Mishnah describes a scenario where the city was totally plundered. It was non-Jews came in, and the city was laid, siege was laid around the city, and the Mishnah goes on to say, "Kol kahanos shenimtzu b'tzocha psulos." All the kahanos that are inside the city are going to be psulos. They're going to be disqualified to their husbands. Now kahanos meaning they were married to kohanim. Okay, now that's a tremendous jump. Not a jump. But a tremendous assumption that's being made that these women are all going to be compromised, going to be violated. But again, it's in living in our day and age and living in our society and very, very blessed, unbelievably blessed of what we're living in. So it's hard for really us to capture in pictures and just in a sense of what it means to be in this kind of situation. But the Gemara assumes, though, the Mishnah assumes that if you have such a siege, so the women are going to be prohibited. Testimony, of course, can tell us that they were not violated during the siege. What kind of testimony do you need? So in this halacha, so you don't need shnei edim, you don't need two witnesses. One witness would be sufficient. And even Eved Veshivcha, even those who are normally not capable of testifying, are believed as well. They're also extended credibility. Where else do we see this? So, the truth of the matter is we see this in a very related halacha, and that's Shvuya. In other words, when a woman is taken into captivity, we said the same thing. That although, the general assumption is that when a woman is taken into captivity, so her captors had their way with her and they violated her, and if she was married to a Kohen, she'll be prohibited to a Kohen. Nevertheless, we also learned that Eidus, a testimony, can give her a status of not having been violated. And there too, in the case of Shvuya, you don't need two Eidim, one witness will be enough, and even Eved Veshivcha, even those who cannot normally testify will be believed as well. That is what we have been discussing since the Mishnah. We did already some of the Gemara yesterday. We're towards the bottom of the Amud, and we are starting today with the words Amar Rav Idi Bar Avin. It's about 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud. First one of the line is Shushilta V'Kaba V'Gavza V'Avza. Remember yesterday we went, the Gemara made a distinction in terms of what kind of army we're talking about, what kind of invading army we're talking about. Was it a local army? Was it an army that comes in from outside? And yesterday the Gemara drew a distinction between the two. In the meantime, however, we're just picking it up right where we left off yesterday. Rav Idi Bar Avin Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Ashin Im Yesha Machbos Achas Matzelos Al Kanos Kulos Kulan. What if there's a safe room? What if there's a place where they can go and hide? So in other words, in order to, knowing that there's a siege and knowing that the Ovdei Kochavim are going to come in and violate any woman they encounter, so what if there's a place for them to hide? So the Gemara quotes a Amoraic statement, which is, that's fine. Meaning that will protect them. That will give them a presumptive state of not being violated. So the Gemara says, okay, let's see how big this heter is. What if, let's say, the safe room, the hiding spot, cannot allow for all the women in the community to go there? And by the way, all the women, really, the focus is on Ashes Cohen. because Eishes Yisrael, God forbid, she's violated, but she's not prohibited to her husband. So really, we're talking about Eishes Kohanim. So let's say the room in question over here, it's a safe room, but it can't hold everybody. So mi amrina kochad v'chad hainu, ha? Odim alo amrina. So the Gemara says, here's the question. The question is as follows. We know that one of the women, at least one of the women in the community, for sure is safe. So now, if you are a Kohen, married to a woman in such a city, so can you make the argument, and can you say, yeah, my wife was one of those women, or my wife was that woman? Can you make that argument? Now, generally speaking, in halacha, if it's only room enough for one, that means that the rest of them cannot go into the safe room. So generally speaking, in halacha, so what would we say? Rove, we would go with a majority. If the majority of the women in the community can't be there, so then that's usually the halacha. But over here, keep in mind, the mitigating factor over here is we don't know that any woman was violated. It is a strong suspicion. It's more than a strong suspicion. I don't exactly know how to phrase it, but it's obviously more than a strong suspicion because, as we learned in the Mishnah, a woman is going to have to leave her husband because of this very legitimate concern. But on the counterbalance of that, we already know that you don't need testimony to say that she was not violated. One witness is enough, even if it's a person who normally can't testify. So we already know that you don't need strong, solid evidence in order to say that she was not violated. So here, basically now we're just trying to push it to the limit. Here we have a safe room where women can hide, but only one woman could fit there. We don't know which woman was there. So maybe this is enough of an argument. It's not a strong one, obviously, but maybe it's enough of an argument to say that all the women who married to Kohanim in this community have not been violated, because there is a safe room where at least there's a possibility that the Eishes Kohen was there. The Gemara says, "Umay Shnei Mishnei Shvilim." And how is this question any different than the question of Shnei Shvilim? Okay, this is a question that we've encountered a couple times throughout Shas. We did this back in Pesachim, the case of the two paths. Shnei Shvilim, Echad Tameh v'Echad Tahor. Now, there are two paths, and they both arrive at the same destination. They both arrive at the same destination, and along one path there's Toma, meaning there is a grave, somebody was buried, along the width of the of this path. So if you walk down one of the two paths, you know for sure you're going to become Tameh. But over here, just to make this interesting, and obviously the Gemara is going to draw a comparison in just a moment, only one of the paths has the Tumah, and we don't know which one it is. So 50-50. It's halachic Russian roulette. And now, two people walk down these paths, and again, each one's walking down one. We don't know which one has the Tumah. We know one of them does. And then afterwards, both of them handle Taharas afterwards. Rabbi Yehuda Amrei, Mishal Zeh Bifnei Atzma V'Zeh Bifnei Atzma Taharas. So Rabbi Yehuda says, look, we could take this case-by-case basis. Meaning, if let's say one person comes over to me and says, here's what happened, Rabbi. And he goes and he describes how he walked down one of the paths. He knows there was Tumah on one of the paths. He doesn't know which one it was. So now we're talking about a 50-50. This is, let's speak now in halachic terminology, Safek Tumah. It's a public area. It's a question of Tumah. The halacha is Safek Tumah versus Rabim is Tahor. Good. So the Rav is a very simple Shaila. The Rav will say, good. Anything you handle is Tahor. And then the next person comes and the next person also asks, well, let me ask you about me. Now again, remember, this case is interesting because they didn't walk down the same path. But the other person comes in and goes through the same Shaila and the same response, good. Safek Tahor versus Rabim is Tahor. Sorry, Safek Tumah Brishos Rabim is Torah. However, Shneim Ka'achas Tmeos. So, but what if they both come at the same time and ask a Shaila at the exact same time? So now, look at it from the perspective of the Rav. The Rav says, look, I know they're asking me at the same time, but I can't tell both of them that neither of you walked down Tumah because the fact is one of the two walked down Tumah. In a case-by-case scenario, so he can go over the basic halacha, which is the Safek Tumah. But if they're coming simultaneously, it's just not reality that both of them are Tahor. We know one of the two are Tahor. So, Shem Kachas Tameos. Rav Yossi Omer, Bein Kach Vein Kach Tamein. And Rav Yossi is of the opinion that in both cases they're going to be Tameh. The Amar Rav Evitem Rav Yochanan Bebasa Achas. Now, before I explain Rav Yossi, got to read more Gemara. So Rava says that Bebasa Achas Devar Kol Tameh. Look, if they both come at the same time, the Rav cannot tell them they're both Tahor. It's not true. So the Rav can't say it. So therefore, if they're not both Tahor, we have to go with the only other alternative. They're both Tameh. And if they come one after another, like I described a moment ago, there is no debate. Meaning then the Rav can take each case separately, and each case separately in its own merit, the ruling is tahor. The middle ground where these Tanaim, Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi, are arguing is the following. Let's say they don't both come at the same time, but one friend is going to now ask for himself and for his friend. Okay, and let's just as a small editorial, we can add over here some friend, meaning that now that he's asking for himself and for his friend, even though his friend hasn't shown up here to ask the question, so now the issue is, when the Rav is ruling, is he ruling at the two of them at the same time, or can he still rule on an individual basis? That's the machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi. And that's exactly the issue. That's what at odds between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda. Rashi points out over here, halacha machlokas between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda. Who does halacha fall like? Halacha falls like Rav Yossi. That's our rules, Gemara and Erevin. So now that we know the halacha is like Rav Yossi, so let's think now. We have one path that's tummy, one path that's tahor. Two people walk down the two paths. We don't know which one's which, but doesn't matter. Rav Yossi says that if they come in at the same time, or even if they're not coming at the same time, but one is asking on behalf of himself and his friend, Rav Yossi says that the Rav has to be machmir. The Rav has to rule with considering all of them. So the Gemara says, so over here also, again, the safe room, the question that we're dealing with is the safe room only has room for one of the women. Now I know it's not the same, there's a number of differences. And the Gemara is in a moment just going to highlight the most basic difference. But before we get to that, just let's understand the comparison between the two cases. In that, we're dealing with a case where there's a siege. The non-Jews are coming in. They're going to violate women. There is a safe room. The safe room can right now only hold one of the women. We don't know which of the women avail themselves to that safe room. And so now, l'kulu kibasachas dami. So the Gemara says, when the Eishes Kohanim are asking, aren't they all essentially asking at the same time? Now again, we hold like Rav Yossi. They don't actually have to present themselves for a psak. But when the Rav is ruling, he's not ruling on one of the women, he's ruling on all of the women. So in that regard, it is analogous to the case of the Shnei Shvilim.
Right.
And the Gemara therefore is saying, just like in the case of Shnei Shvilim, we're ruling their old Tamei, so over here, why wouldn't it be the same? That's right now the reason why we're putting these two cases side by side.
There's a huge difference between.
Well, the Gemara's going to get to the huge difference, so just wait, because you may give away the Gemara's answer, and knowing you probably will. Yes.
Why are we taking as a fact
that? Okay, good. So you're also both perfect. So the Gemara says Achi Ashta. The Gemara says good. We learned the Mishnah together in Taharos. In of itself, that's worthwhile. And the Gemara attempted to compare the two, but the Gemara says, "Hachi hashra, they're not comparable." Gemara says, "Look, in the case of the Shnei Shvilim, in that Mishnah Taharos, we're dealing with a known. The known is there is Tuma. Now there is also an unknown. Obviously, the unknown is we don't know which path it is. But we start with the fact that there is Tuma." And now, with that being the starting point, now we have to address, did he go or did he not go down the Tamei path? So again, if it's one individual and it's a Suffolk Tamei versus Rabbim Stower. But now, complicated by the fact that it's two people, each one walked down a different path, we don't know which one's which, but when coming together, it can't be Tahor, it's got to be Tamei. What if one's asking on behalf of the other? Machlok between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda. But again, all that discussion, good discussion, that's talking about a case where we know there's Tuma. Here in our case, we don't know that any woman was violated, meaning there is a presumption that women are violated, but it's not a known. It's the starting point for our discussion is we don't know that any woman was violated, so therefore the two cases are not comparable. By Rav Ashi, Amar lo nichmesi v'lo nichmesi mahu. Okay, and on this now we're going to again try to push the halacha all the way to the end, and that is what if one of the women say the following: there was a safe room.
There was no room, a safe room for even one. Why are we taking as a fact that when the army comes, it's going
to... I said in the beginning, it's hard for us to envision that we assume that every woman was violated. It's very hard.
Taking as a fact.
Agreed. No argument. Agreed. So by Rav Ashi, Amar lo nichbeti v'lo nimesi. What if one of the women says as follows? Look, there was a safe room, but I'm going to be honest. I didn't use the safe room, and now I'm going to be once again honest, but I wasn't violated. So now, if there was at least a possibility of her using the safe room, and she readily admits that she didn't use it, but she's also admitting that she wasn't violated, so what does it sound like? Hapesha asur, hapesha hitter. So it sounds like she should be believed. Mahu. Mi amrina, we're now on the top of Chazayim and base. Mi amrina mali l'shakir. So on one hand, we have this rule of mali l'shakir. Right? Pesha asa, pesha eater, migul, maybe the same thing, may not be exactly the same thing. Either way, the point is that she is extended extra credibility because of that, of what she could have argued. Or the Gemara says, maybe no. Maybe we're not going to invoke over here the rule of hapesha asa. Okay, and
is it classic? Because unless she would tell you, you wouldn't know.
Right. So stay tuned. The Gemara is going to explore this question. So the Gemara says, you know, I don't see this being any different than the following case. Everyone knows that when you rent a car, so there's a rental agreement. And of course, the minhag is not to read the rental agreement. Nobody reads the rental agreement, or maybe I'm just describing myself. Either way. So over here, like in any rental contract, so the owner of the item wants to make sure that, look, you'll use it, but it's got to be normal usage. And not only does it have to be normal usage, but the owner of the item could put any clause he wants in the renter's contract, meaning it's his item, and he rents it on his terms. So the Gemara over here describes the following scenario. So how gavra dagale chamer lechave. So there was a person who rented a donkey to his friend. Amalei lo tezal beorcha denar pekot. Okay, look, take my donkey wherever you want, drive it wherever you want, that's fine. Don't go down the river of Narpakot, the Ikamaya, because there's water over there. So he made a clause in the rental contract, you can't go down the river of Narpakot, but he also points out a reason why you can't go down Narpakot. I don't want you to go there, because you're gonna try to get my donkey through that river, and the water is gonna ruin my donkey. Kill it, ruin it, whatever. So Zilba Orcha Denarash. The Lake Amaya. So when you use my donkey and you're going from one place to another, going on another path, i.e. the path of Narash. There's no water over there. So now the renter went down the river of Narpakot, just like he was told not to. and the donkey died. So now he goes in front of Rava. Now here we go. Simple case of adjudication. Now the owner of the item is going to say he violated the renter's contract. He's liable. And what's the renter going to say? Well, we get to hear it. So the renter, first of all, made an admission. He says, I went down the river of Narpakot. But then he says, but there was no water in the river of Narpakot. So the animal died, and what he's arguing is that the animal died out of what's called regular usage, right? You rent a car and the car breaks down, so if it's just regular usage, you're not liable. Again, I'm not talking about what the law is in this. We're right now dealing with the halacha. Halacha is that if it's regular usage, the renter's not liable. So what the renter's saying over here is that it was regular usage. I did violate the terms of the contract. I'm admitting it. But he told me why he doesn't want to go down Narpakot, and I'm telling you, I went down Narpakot like I shouldn't have, but there was no water. So Amarava Malila Shakir, Ibai Amale Borcha the Narish Azle. So Rava says, I'm going to believe him. And I'm going to believe him because, look, he could have started off the whole discussion by saying, I went down the Narish path. He didn't. In other words, he put himself in a bind. He incriminated himself. And so, Apesha Asur, Apesha Hitter. V'amarle Abaye. So Abaye says to Rava, I would not extend him the credibility in this case. Malila Shakir B'Malka Meidin L'Omrinan. We have a principle, and that's the following. Yes, Migu does give you extra credibility. That's true. But that's only if there is no counter evidence. Once there is counter evidence, and by counter evidence I mean, let's be very specific. Aidim. If there are witnesses contradicting your Migu, meaning let's say you have a Migu, you have now a not just whatever normal credibility you have, which if you're liable, not much, but with Amigo you have extra credibility, but not in the face of witnesses. If there's testimony, the testimony is always going to beat Amigo. So, here's by the way where it gets a little bit interesting. What witnesses are we talking about over here? Meaning in the case of the renter, What is Abai saying to Rava? That there were actually witnesses? Well, if there were actually witnesses, so then what's Rava's, what did Rava think to begin with? So Rashi points out over here, witnesses over here doesn't mean that there were actual eyewitnesses that there was water on the Nahar Pekod River. Witnesses over here means there are certain things which are just simply known facts, right? What we would call in halacha what's called anan sahade, meaning there are things that are just so self-evident you can't testify otherwise. You're basically testifying against the laws of nature. So, right, if you said that, you know, this thing was floating in the air. I know I'm giving an extreme example. But let's say you say, this thing was floating in the air. I'm telling you, gravity, I know gravity affects most everything. But for whatever reason, the gravity didn't affect this. It's just floating in the air. In other words, and even if you have a migra to make such a claim, such an outlandish claim, your migra is not going to help you. So, over here, there's always water in the Nahar Pekod River. So for him to say that there's no water in the Nahar Pekod River, that's absurd. It's ridiculous. It's like you're contradicting witnesses. So to which Abai says to Rava, we're not going to believe him. In other words, that claim, even if it's a Migo claim, it's going against Eidus.
It's like a chazaka. A chazaka, there's water
right.
there.
Correct. And if the Hari chazaka, correct. It's just, right. Correct. It's established presumptions. So hachi hashta. So hasam vadika idem diika maya. Hacha vadiyit mechashasha huva makum chashasha arminen. And the Gemara once again reminds us, it's like a refresh on the Gemara. The Gemara reminds us, stop making the comparisons between the case of the siege and these other cases in halacha. In these other cases of halacha, we're dealing with known entities. So there, amigo is not going to help. Like we discussed in the earlier case in the Shnei Shvilim, one of the paths is actual tamei. But over here, once again, we don't know any woman became tamei. I struggle with this in terms of how to describe it halachically. It's a presumption. It's an assumption, but it's not a known fact. It's not a known entity. And if there's an argument that you can make in order to save yourself from this assumption, so you make the argument. In other areas, halacha, these arguments won't help you. Fine, but in the case of the siege, in the case of Charkom, so it's going to help you. Statement. Gemara now goes on to discuss as follows. To say that a woman was not violated by the siege and by the lawless army that's coming in, so we said in our Mishnah that you don't need Edom, you don't need witnesses, one sufficient, and even those who cannot normally testify, a woman, a slave, even those who cannot normally testify can give her a status of not being violated. What about her own slave? The Mishnah didn't say anything. Sounds like anybody, and even her own slave, or Reminu. But the Gemara points out there's a Mishnah in Gittin, which we're about to learn, and the Mishnah in Gittin says, you could trust nearly anyone, again, under limited circumstances. You can trust nearly anyone, but you can't trust her own slave. And for obvious reason. Her own slave served her, knows her, is gonna really sacrifice for her master. And let's learn the Mishnah getting together. Lotus Yachinimo Ella Api Adim. A get is issued. They can't seclude themselves, the get was written. Okay, sorry. Get was written. Once it gets written, they can't seclude with each other. So, if they do seclude themselves with each other after the get was written, it's the get now becomes known as a get yashan, literally an old get, and at that point in time you can't use it anymore. Okay. So, after the get is written, there's a prohibition to seclude with each other. Rashi points out, you can see Rashi inside, it's Gzera de Rabbanan, but whatever. Not whatever, but they can't seclude after the get's been written up. So, what do you need every time they need to get together? Witnesses. So, lo titziachinim al api edim, v'afil api eved, v'api shivcha. And, in terms of this halacha, that they can't seclude themselves together, you don't need two bona fide witnesses, one's enough. Eved shivcha, that's going to be enough. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says, chutz mishivcha sam in meshalibo gatz b'shivcha sam. However, the only one person that cannot be used is her own shivcha. Her own shivcha, the Mishnah describes, shalibo gatz b'shivcha sam. They have a very close relationship, her and her shivcha. And her shivcha is not going to incriminate her master.
Even another shivcha, how could that shivcha 24/7 a week. What's the delay?
Understood. They're not living together, but anytime they're going to be together in the same room, so they need a.
Because we said for the city, like the shomeret of the city, that the other army appoints, one of them can get in. The other ones are looking.
Okay, fine. Understood. But again, when with all these discussions, you have to know what your starting point is. Your starting point for this discussion is it's a gzeirah derabbanan that they can't seclude themselves. So once we start with a gzeirah derabbanan, now the chachamim, based on their judgment, will decide what we need in order to ensure that they wouldn't seclude. So in this particular case, anyone could serve as a buffer, except for her maidservant. I'm a rough puppy. So now, let's just state out the Gemara's problem or contradiction. Our Mishnah Ksuva says that when you have the siege coming in, anyone can testify to that this woman has not been violated, and the Mishnah's silent. So it sounds like for the Mishnah, even our own shivcha. Meanwhile, in the case of Gittin and the Get Yashan, anyone can testify that they didn't seclude with each other except for her shivcha. So what's the difference between the two cases? So, answers. Amar Rav Papi b'shvuyi yikilu. Answer number one. We are talking about shvuyi. We're talking about a case analogous to a captive. And we're going to be more lenient. Answer number two. Rav Papa amar ha b'shivcha dida ha b'shivcha didei. Answer number two is we're going to draw a distinction between whether it's his shivcha or her shivcha. Her shivcha is going to be loyal to her. His shivcha, not so much. V'shivcha dida lo mehemna ha-ketani ina demeid al atzmo. Ha-shivcha dida mehemna. So the Gemara says, well, what about the fact that a person cannot testify about themselves, but her shivcha, presumably, would be allowed to testify about her. So the Gemara says, shivcha sonami katzma dami. The Gemara says, no. Meaning when you, like we said time and again, self-reporting is just simply not admissible evidence. You can't talk about yourself. Your shivcha talking about you, says the Gemara, is analogous to you talking about yourself. Again, she's so loyal to you, she's so part of your team that she wouldn't defect. And if she says anything about you, it's because she's so biased, she's so loyal. Rav Ashi amar havaha b'shivcha dida b'shivcha mechzechas yevashatka. Hasam d'shtikasa matirasa lo mehemna. Hacha d'shtikasa rasasa mehemna. So the Gemara says another answer, a third answer, and that is the following. There's a difference between being silent and telling a bold-faced lie. Meaning, if the issue is for her to be silent, she'll be silent. If the issue is for her to tell a bold-faced lie, that she won't do. Hashinami asim ashakra, I'm sorry, hashinami asim ashakra, talk to lo avde. Gemara says, look, for her to be silent and to be loyal to her master, that she'll do. For her to then be subpoenaed and asked to give a testimony and to lie on her behalf, the Gemara says, as an assumption, obviously, you know, it can happen, it may happen, but as a general presumption, we're not going to assume that she does that. And the Gemara then tells an incident that we see this to be so. Ki ha demari barisik v'amin lechana barisik asalei achami bechuzai. So the Gemara tells a story where in comes in a long-lost brother. Who knew? In other words, I had a brother, and, well, the Gemara is telling an actual incident. And and the long-lost brother comes in, and reunion's great, hugs, kisses, everything. Okay, now great. Dad died, I want half the estate. Okay. So the other brother says, yeah, but I'll be honest with you, it was a great reunion, and, you know, and we really enjoyed each other's company, but let's be honest, I don't really know that you're my brother, and you're coming, you're claiming you're my brother. That's nice. You're trying to take money out of my hands, and there's no chazaka that you're my brother. So you know what? I'm going to make chavera alavaraya. You're not taking money out of my hands. I'll still come into Rav Chista. So they go to Rav Chista. I'm relay shpir kamalach dichsiv. Now Rav Chista says, you know, he's making a legitimate claim, meaning he doesn't recognize you. And I get it. Last time he saw you was childhood. Right, they didn't recognize Yosef. At the time Yosef left, you like the way I said that? At the time that Yosef left, he was 17 years of age. No beard. Now they see each other the next time. Yosef is, if I got my numbers correctly, I was going to say 39. Okay. So Yosef was 39 and, okay, adult, beard. They didn't recognize him. So over here, brother's got a point. In other words, you're coming in from overseas. You're saying, hi, I'm your brother. And Rav Chisda says, he's making a fair claim. He doesn't recognize you. Why should he share the estate with you? So Rav Chisda talks to the brother who's coming in from overseas, and he says, look, you need Edom. You need witnesses to testify that you are in fact a brother. So interesting. This story takes an interesting turn. So the long-lost brother says, look, I do have witnesses, and they would testify on my behalf. It happens to be that my brother is a bully. Okay, we could use stronger words to describe the brother, but he was a real intimidator. No one's ready to testify against him. So, Zil Aisinu At Delav Achich Ahu. So now they turn to the brother, who actually has a legitimate claim. I don't recognize this guy. I don't know what he's talking about. He says he's my brother, but I don't even know who he is. And now Rav Chisda turns to the bully, who has a legitimate claim, and says, okay, you now have to offer witnesses that you're not his brother. So Amalei Dina Hachia Moshe Mechaveir Olav Araya. So the bully knows what's going on. He knows halacha. You can't do that. Burden of proof is on me. I'm the one holding the estate. Everyone knows I'm his son. This guy comes in from left field and he claims that he's my brother. We don't know, and you're taking money away from me, and I have to bring proof that I'm not his brother? So Amalei, so I told you the story takes an interesting turn. Rav Chisda says, "Hachi dainin alach lekula ala mechavrech." So interesting halacha, and that is that if somebody is in fact an intimidator, and you know that no one's ready to testify against him, so the Beis Din now has to turn around to the intimidator and say, because you're an intimidator, now the burden of proof is put upon you.
And that has to be proven.
Correct. And this halacha. It's interesting. First of all, it speaks to the idea that if you're going to become a member of Beis Din, you have to have courage. Meaning you're going to have to stand up to the bully.
Right.
So that, good. That's you know.
That's one.
That's one.
The bulliness of the person has to be proven.
Correct. Meaning correct. It has to be. I'm assuming and you know intuitively.
If Rav Chisda has seen that before.
Right. Correct. Rav Chisda has to have known. Rav Chisda cannot just simply say, you know.
You're a bully.
Right. You're a bully. Correct. Agreed. Agreed. So the Gemara says, okay, so now, look, he's a bully, he's a professional bully. So the Gemara says, so now, aren't we going to suspect that not only is he going to try out witnesses, but he'll find witnesses and they'll lie on his behalf. So the Gemara says, Tartilo Avde. So Gemara says, again, it goes back to the idea that we were expressing earlier. To be quiet and to be a loyalist and to not give up, you know, any trade secrets, if you will. So the Gemara says that's fine. A loyalist will do that, but a loyalist will not go to court and issue evidence information that they know is a lie. Now, I also live in this world, and I. I also know that's not always true, but again, we're working with general assumptions, and the Gemara says generally we'll assume that people will not lie to that extent. People will not be that brazen. Okay, let's continue in the Gemara. I'm sorry, just lost my spot. Hashanam and Meshachri Tartilo Avdu. Lema Kitanai. Gemara suggests now that maybe this is all subject to a machlokas tanaim, zuedus ish v'isha, meaning what's subject to a machlokas tanaim. Again, what's at issue over here is as follows. When we have the siege land coming into the city, so testimony can be given that this woman was not been violated, testimony can be given by anybody, including shivcha, and our Mishnah says even her own shivcha. And meanwhile, the Mishnah Gittin says her shivcha cannot testify about her, and we gave a number of answers to explain the difference between our Mishnah and Ksuvos and the Mishnah Gittin. The Gemara now continues. The Gemara says maybe this is subject to a machlokas tanaim. Lema kitanai zuedus ish v'isha tinok v'tinokas avia v'ima v'achia v'achosa ava lo bena ubita lo avda v'shivchasa. Not her son, not her daughter, not her eved, not her shivcha. So this brisa says that everyone can testify except for her children and her avadim. And again, the reason why is because we assume they're such loyalists. V'tanya idach, and we learned in another brisa, ha'kol ne'min la'amid chutz me'hemena u'ba'ala. And then we have another brisa, and the other brisa says anyone can testify about her, and the only parties that cannot testify about her is A, her herself, and B, her husband, ishto kagufo. So those are the only two that cannot, but anyone else can. So what do you see over here? Can her maidservant testify about her? Seems to be machlokas between the tanaim, which is exactly what the Gemara wanted to argue. It's machlokas. So the Rav Papi, the Rav Ashi, Tanaihi, the Gemara says, yes, according to the Amoraim, Rav Papi and Rav Ashi, who gave their distinctions between our Mishnah and the Mishnah and Gittin, you're right, it's machlokas tanaim. However, the Rav Papa Milema Tanaihi, but according to Rav Papa, not necessarily, Amalach Rav Papa, because Rav Papa will tell you the following. Kitanyahi b'mesicha lefi tuma. Look, Rav Papa says, normally, her maidservant cannot testify about her. However, if the maidservant is saying, not testimony, but mesicha lefi tuma, we've gone over this idea a number of times, casual speak, her speech was not intended to be used as admissible evidence, but just simple casual speech, right? Innocent casual speech, that is actually admissible. Now again, the rub is that she has to be saying it, not realizing that it was going to be used as admissible testimony. Kiha dechi asa ravdimi amar rav chanan kartigna mishtai maisa balifnei rav yeshua ben levi. So the Gemara has a couple of versions of who said the story and who was the story about. So according to one version, the story involved Rav Yishuv ben Levi. V'yamrila Rav Yishuv ben Levi mishtam maisa balifnei Rebbe. According to another version, Rav Yishuv ben Levi was the one telling the story, but the story was about Rebbe. Either way, there was a person who was speaking very casually and very innocently. And he says that me and my mother were taken captive by the non-Jews. Yatzati l'shov ma'im dati alimi. And I was always cognizant about my mother. I always looked out for my mother. Lalakit etim dati alimi. I collected wood. I was thinking about my mother. Not just thinking about my mother, but aware, conscious, alert about my mother. Rebbe lakun alpiv. And because I was always cognizant about my mother, so Rebbe said, okay, mother's fine. Mother was not been violated. And Rebbe allowed her to marry a Kohen. Now, it's a son. But the son is not offering testimony. He's speaking in very casual terms, very innocent terms. This is what's called Mesiach Lefi Tumo. And for that, Rebbe says that that is admissible because he didn't mean it as testimony. And what the Gemara is suggesting now is Rav Papa will tell you, I'm arguing the same thing. Under normal circumstances, the children and the maidservants cannot testify about their mother / master. Because again, they're such loyalists that they're just simply not extended, and they're not afforded the credibility. But if it's Mesiach Lefi Tumo, Rav Papa will tell you that becomes now admissible evidence.
In order to make that ruling, they have to wait for a casual conversation.
I understood.
By chance.
Agreed. Yes.
So it could happen that the lady is 80 years old and cannot marry.
Understood. Agreed. Amar of Zechariah ben Akatzav. Amon azeh lo zazo yada mitoch yadi misha shenichnasu avdi kocham liyushan v'achiyatsu. Okay, I know that you don't walk away from daf these days with joy. These are just such sad stories. So Rav Zechariah ben Akatzav says, I swear that my hand did not leave the hand of my wife when the avdi kocham came in. And meaning, I was protective over my wife. He is now trying to testify that his wife has not been violated. So, Yerushalayim v'Ashiyatsu. Until the non-Jews came into Yerushalayim, until they left. Amru lo, they said to him, Einad amed al atzmo. Nope. Now you're too partial. You're testifying about your wife. That's, as we just discussed a moment ago, that's like the wife testifying about herself. In other words, you have too much of a vested interest, and you're extended no credibility, and unfortunately, she's prohibited to you. Tana, the Gemara starts off, Afa Pikein, Yichelo Bias. I should have made that point clearer. He was a Kohen. So, Atana, Afa Pikein, Yichelo Bias Bechatzero. Uchishi Yotze Yotze Berosh Baneh, Uchishi Nechnesus Nechnesus Besof Baneh. Now, just, it's sad. Let's just say it, but Let's deal with the halacha. The halacha is that they could live in the same courtyard together, but they can't seclude with each other. Meaning, they're still going to raise a family, but because she's prohibited to him, so insurances are made that they cannot be miyachid together. So Abaye Malas was begrusha kain. So the Gemara says, can you do that with a grusha? Can you live within the same chatzer? Now, I know when I say chatzer, so we don't think from the Mishnah's perspective, we think about, you know, our cities, our suburbs, our, you know, the environs that we live in. So I'm not really sure, obviously. I'm not sure how to translate this into what is, you know, our modern city structure. Are we talking about your block? Are we talking about your development? Are we talking about your immediate environment? It's not clear. I'll just stick with the words of the Mishnayos, and then if it's a halachic issue, you'll speak to your local Orthodox rabbi. So the Gemara says as follows: can you do that with a grusha? Meaning, can you live within the same chatzer? In other words, in the Braisa that we just learned together, so yes, you can live with the shvuya who you're forbidden to. But again, remember, shvuya is, we don't know that she was violated. It's just an assumption. It's a presumption that she was violated. So maybe we could be mekel. Masha Enkin, when it comes to a grusha, so there should be, maybe there's more reason to be concerned that that if they live within proximity of one another, they're going to stumble upon one another. Odim aloshan tashma detanya the Gemara here quotes the Braisa. Megarishes ishto lo sinasei b'shchunaso. After the divorce, they should not live in the same shchuna. V'imaya kohen lo tador ima b'mavui. Now, if he's a kohen, he cannot live with her within the same mavui. Just a brief explanation of what the difference is between the grusha and the kohen. Grusha, what are we worried about? The chachamim were worried about that the grusha, obviously they were intimate with one another historically, so that means that there's a chance that they may stumble upon each other. Therefore, they need to separate an entire shchuna. And again, I don't know how to translate that into modern terminology, but let's just say community. They can't live in the same community. However, a kohen, even if they didn't remarry, cannot live within the same mavui. Mavui is a more confined area. Mavui is, right, you remember Erevin? A number of houses open to a chatzer, a number of chatzeros open up to a mavui. But still, it is a very enclosed area. And there, the reason why is because even if the woman didn't remarry, the kohen's prohibited to a grusha. So they cannot be within the same closed quarters of the mavui. So, imaya kfar katan zaya maisav amru kfar katan nidun kishchuna. What if it's a small out-of-town village? A small out-of-town village is ruled like a shchuna. So, the Braisa says very clearly that when it comes to a man who divorces his wife, a grusha, so they cannot live in the same chatzer, but they cannot live within the same shchuna. Again, I'll leave it for others to explain what exactly the parameters of the shchuna are. Okay, minid chamim neimi. As long as we're here, the Gemara now goes on to discuss after the divorce. So they have to separate a distance of a shchuna, whatever that may be. Whose responsibility is it? The husband or the wife? So Tashma detanya he nidches mi panav. Ve'in hu nidche mi panaha. It's her responsibility to move away. Ve'im haisa chatzer shala hu nidches mi panaha. However, if she's the owner of the chatzer, so now she has to say, she gets to say to him, look, we're divorced, one of us has to move away, I'm the owner of the chatzer, it's your responsibility to move. Ibailu haisa chatzer shoshneima, what if it was a joint ownership, they had partnership over it? So tashma, nid ches mi panav. So she then has the first responsibility to move away. Now, if we're talking about his chatzer pshita, the Gemara says it's talking about her chatzer. But the Gemara points out, but we know that's not true. If she's the owner of the chatzer, he has to move. So the Gemara says that it's must be talking about by process of elimination where they both were joint ownerships, meaning they had a partnership. So the Gemara says, Dilma Dagger Meger. So the Gemara says, not necessarily, could just simply be the renting. My Havela, the Gemara says, Tashma, the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Yeshayahu Hinei Hashem etatalecha tatale gever. The Navi tells the Jewish people, you're going to be in exile, and worse than that, you're going to be the exile of a man. And v'amar after tule degar v'kashem i'di isisa. Very interesting. Gemara here speaks to the idea that women have a better chance of landing on their feet than men do. Men, once they're sent into exile, so men are a wreck. Men are a disaster. And the Navi's saying to the Jewish people, not only am I going to put you in exile, I'm going to put you in exile like a man who's a wreck, who's not going to be able to land on his feet. But women are in a better position to land on their feet. Tana Rabbanan. Love Amen Benichse Avia Ain in the first all day Acher. Gemara over here goes over a number of halachas, interesting halachas. The sensitivity that a husband and wife, after they get a divorce, they need to have in order to make sure that they don't stumble upon each other. So for example, let's say she borrows money from him. He borrows money from her. She came into the marriage with Nichse Malog, he borrows money from his wife, Ain in first all day Acher. If they're going to pay back, we shouldn't try the case with both of them being in the room together, but there should be some sort of mediator. Rav Sheshes feels so strongly about this. He says that if they come in for adjudication, I will not see the case, and there needs to be mediation. Rav Papa says, I feel even stronger. If a husband and wife come in together to adjudicate, so I will tell them no, and if they insist, I'll put him in Chayrim. Rav Huna Breda of Yeshua Amar, going to just keep going up. Rav Huna Breda of Yeshua says, I feel even stronger about this. Naguri Nami Minag Dinan. Give them Malkus Midarabanan. Meaning that once they get a divorce, so they really should not be in proximity to one another. And if they do so different degrees of what exactly will happen if they various opinions in terms of what should be done. Am Rav Nachman Tana Beva Rabasi Bamedvar Mamashin is Gashman and Nisun. Avamishin is Garsaman Erisin Ifrasaide Atma. The Gemara over here says, but we'll draw the following distinction. That's only if they got a divorce after Nisun, meaning they were intimate with one another. But Erisin, meaning they were married but not intimate, so then we don't need all these safeguards. Shane Libo Gaspa. How are Varus Asadasila Kamadirava a man and a woman who went through Erisin and they got a divorce and they go to Rava Yosef, Rava Adabar Masa Kamei Uke Rava Shluche Ben Asayu. Now Rava would not have them come into the court together, but rather he would have a mediator. Amalei Rava Adabar Masa Vamar Rav Nachman Tanu Be'evor Rabasi V'chulei. Yeah, but didn't we see in Evor Rabasi? It's a brisa. Didn't we see that if the divorce occurred after Erisin, so you don't need the mediation? So kachazina de kagais about dade. So Rava says, you're right. Generally speaking, you don't need mediation. I'm looking at the two of them. I see the way they communicate with one another. They have a familiarity with one another. I'm not going to see them together. They're only through a mediator. The Gemara has another version of the story where he didn't have a mediator. He says, shouldn't you have a mediator? He says, no. You only cannot see them together in court if they went through Nisuin. But this couple only went through Erisin. I don't feel it to be a problem. So, in the second version of the story, Rava was told, look, you're generally speaking, of course that's a brisa, you're right, but look at the two of them are looking at each other. Look at the rapport they have with one another. Clearly they are comfortable with one another. He says, I would not judge the case having both of them come into the court at the same time, but rather I would do it through a mediator. The Elon Aman Lahamid Begodla Mashara Bekotnan. Next Mishnah. Generally speaking, I know we've gone over this idea before, but in the last Mishnah of the second parak, you cannot submit testimony about what you saw when you were a child, generally. Right? When you were a child, your memories are very weak, your mind is still developing. And if you don't love my psychological explanations, that's fine. The halacha is, it's inadmissible testimony. However, the Mishnah over here is going to give us a list of those things that you can testify about in your youth. And the Gemara is going to go on to explain why are these exceptions to the rule. So, Neman Adam Lamar Zeksav Yadi, Yadosha Abba, Zeksav Yadosha Rebbe, that's my father's signature. I saw when I remember when I was a kid. That's my Rebbe's signature, I remember when I was a kid. Zeksav Yadosha Achi, that's my brother's signature. Zechor Yitib Aponish Yatza Be'emun Avarosha Parua. I remember I was was at the wedding when I was a kid, and she was a virgin, and I know that because I remember how she dressed like a basula dresses, and like we discussed earlier in the Masechta. I remember as a kid that that so and so was taken out of school so that he can go eat truma with his father, or that he was at the distribution center getting truma. I remember this as a kid. I remember as a kid that this place is a base of pras. We'll discuss what that means later. I remember as a kid that when we took a little stroll on Shabbos, we didn't walk past this point because this is where truma ends. All these can be remembered as an adult, and even though generally testimony of a child, of child memories, is inadmissible, these are exceptions, and we're going to explain all these exceptions in the Gemara. However, here's what you can't do. I remember as a kid, I went out to his field, and his field ended right over here. And now there's a dispute in terms of where the land ends. That kind of testimony is inadmissible, and for a very simple reason. Because you're going to take money away from somebody else, you cannot do that with a childhood memory. You know, that's his place. He used to stand there. He used to eulogize over there. Meaning he owned that place. I remember that because of a childhood memory. Once again, you're trying to submit that testimony to take land away from somebody else? Inadmissible. Now, in the first case of the Mishnah, what is he testifying about? A signature. And why is he testifying about a signature? Remember what we learned just a week ago? Kiyum Shtaros. Because you need to authenticate a document by having two people testify about the signature. He's saying, that's my dad's signature. I remember that as a kid. The Gemara points out, obviously for Kiyum Shtaros, one witness is not enough. You need two. And this kind of testimony only works when you have an adult testifying alongside him. Utsricha. Just get to the bottom of the page.
I mean,
Yes. And the Gemara goes on to explain, look, father's signature, he's with his father all the time. Avar Rabba lo, but he's not with his Rebbe all the time. Although you can argue the opposite now. And as far as the Rebbe is concerned, he remembers his Rebbe's signature. He's scared of his Rebbe. And that awe, that intimidation, not intimidation, that awe will make a better impression upon him. Your brother's signature, maybe not. Remember, we said this back on Daf Chaf Aleph. We're saying it again. Kiyum Shtaros, authentication is a rabbinic procedure. It's a rabbinic requirement. Heim Amru veHeim Amru. So they allowed a leniency where they could testify about you could testify using a childhood memory. But again, only because we're talking about a din derabbanan of Kiyum Shtaros. And obviously we'll continue to explain why these other cases are lenient.